One in eight women will face breast cancer in her lifetime. But what many don't realize is that long before diagnosis and long after treatment, nutrition plays a powerful role in shaping that journey. From reducing risk to supporting recovery and thriving in remission, what we eat can either help fuel healing or feed inflammation. Today on Vital Voices, we're unpacking the science and the soul of nourishment with registered dietitian nutritionist Anushka Cambridge of Oak Tree Medical Center, as we explore how nutrition and informed choices can make a real difference in the fight against breast cancer.
Today's episode of Vital Voices is brought to you by Oak Tree Medical Center and Wellspring Lifestyle Group.
Vital Voices.
Welcome to Vital Voices, the podcast where we amplify the stories, insights, and expertise of the people shaping the future of our communities, our conversations, and our country. I'm your host, Alexis Burrows. Thank you for joining us. In this episode, we're diving into the vital connection between nutrition and breast cancer, from risk reduction and treatment to long-term wellness. Our guest, Anushka Cambridge from Oak Tree Medical Center, is a registered dietitian nutritionist with a passion for helping individuals make informed, sustainable changes that support healing and overall health. So whether you're walking through breast cancer yourself, supporting a loved one, or simply seeking to live well and lower your risk, this conversation will empower you to see food not just as fuel, but as medicine. Welcome back to the show, Anushka.
Thank you, Mr. Burrows.
So we're excited to have you on to talk about the connection between our nutrition and breast cancer. It's October, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and I think there's so many different ways that people tackle and talk about this issue. And I don't know that I've heard a lot of people take the conversation from the standpoint of nutrition, how it plays in risk reduction, how it plays when people get into sometimes the complicated relationship with food as they go through treatment because of things like nausea and other discomforts, as well as, once you've gone through treatment and you're in remission, how you can eat in a way that preserves, your body and gives you the energy you need to continue fighting it off, right? So we are excited to have you on to kind of talk us through that from the perspective of, a registered dietitian and nutritionist. So we enjoy having you on the show and we're happy to have you back to talk about this important topic.
Yes, Mr. Burrows, like you said, breast cancer is a serious health condition and it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. You would have mentioned that one in eight women may be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime. And this number is staggering, especially when you take in consideration that in the Bahamas, we have a high prevalence of breast cancer. It is also said that we have a genetic mutation, the BRCA gene, amongst our women that increases the risk further. So this conversation about how diet can impact breast cancer is so important because the World Health Organization lets us know that 30 to 50% of all cancers are preventable based upon lifestyle and environmental changes. So I'm so excited about this conversation today.
Awesome. So let's dive right into it. Before we get into nutrition specifically, can you share why this topic of diet and nutrition and breast cancer is so important for women to understand? Because like I said, I think it's an under-discussed topic.
Yes. So as I said, the WHO, World Health Organization, estimates that 30 to 50% of all cancers are preventable. I want persons to sit on
that's
that
a staggering
30
number.
To 50% through lifestyle and environmental changes. Some of these lifestyle changes include dietary modifications. When we think about prevention, there's primary prevention, there's secondary prevention. Primary prevention means we're trying to prevent this condition before happening in the first place. And secondary prevention means that perhaps there may already be some breast cancer incidents, but we're trying to prevent it from getting too serious. The American Cancer Society, which is a very well-known cancer organization worldwide, has published a document that lists the priority primary prevention strategies for breast cancer. They include eating a healthy diet, managing your weight, stopping or limiting alcohol consumption, and exercising, as well as breastfeeding. So this conversation about nutrition and the role in breast cancer is very relevant, and it is based upon evidence-based research.
Okay. So when you think about, we want to start at the beginning in terms of risk reduction. So before you even get to the point of having a diagnosis, right? What role, or how much of a role does lifestyle, in particular nutrition, play in reducing risk? And I guess even, when you think about long-term outcomes of someone who may go through a cancer fight.
Dietary behaviors play a major role in reducing risk, so much that the research has shown us that there are particular foods that are known to be carcinogens. So carcinogen is a term that means a chemical or a substance that is known to cause cancer. And one of them would be, for example, processed meats. The World Health Organization has published that processed meats are a group one carcinogen. We're talking about things like hot dog and corned beef, sausage and salami. A group one carcinogen means that they know it causes cancer. There's no debate about that. They also mentioned that consuming red meats are categorized as a group 2A carcinogen. So what that means is that, well, you know, we have some evidence to show there's an association, but we're not going to give as a strong statement as processed meat. So just from those two statements alone, lets us know that what foods that we eat can directly influence our risk for developing breast cancer. And just plug in a little bit of research there. Some research has shown us that there's some things that we can do to reduce that risk besides avoiding those things mentioned, like the processed meats, minimizing red meat, is increasing dietary fiber. Fiber intake is powerful because it actually helps to absorb these carcinogens and we will stool it out, defecate it. And so increasing the intake of fiber has been shown to be associated with a reduced risk. So what also reduces your risk? Minimizing or avoiding alcohol. So much that if you reduce or avoid alcohol, the research shows that you can lower your risk by 75%.
Oh, wow. Right. So those are very staggering numbers, both the 30 to 50% that you mentioned initially, and then being able to reduce your risk by 75% if you reduce or eliminate your alcohol and smoking. Which is, you know, it's important for people to hear. So, you know, obviously, when you get to talking about nutrition, when you get to talking about diet, there are tons. You have the Mediterranean, you have the South Beach, you have the this, that, and the third. You have, one meal a day. There's so many different variations of, you know, and some of them are decent, some of them are fads. But when you think about this specific conversation, right? Are there certain foods or dietary patterns that are especially protective when it comes to reducing your risk for breast cancer, I guess, developing breast cancer?
When I teach persons about how to eat a healthy diet, I like to start from the beginning. Okay, is this food a whole food or processed food? If we are eating foods that are resembling how it looked from the farm, as close as possible, that is more likely to be a whole food. Eating more whole foods that are not processed and have all those chemicals and those changes will be more associated with reducing the risk of breast cancer. Also, we know that eating more whole foods, unpressed fruits and vegetables, whole grains and beans, it is shown to reduce your risk so much that leading this dietary pattern can reduce risk by about 50%. And so a more plant-based diet, emphasizing those things mentioned, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, seeds, and legumes, and peas, are essential for lowering the risk factor of breast cancer. Now, we want to put labels on these things. Sometimes we want to call it plant-based, but I think not just saying plant-based or Mediterranean, but in emphasizing that we're choosing foods that are whole and unprocessed. Mm-hmm. That could be 100% plant-based. That could be a plant-based called like a Mediterranean that includes some animal protein, perhaps egg whites, fish, and poultry that's lower in fat. However, what we know is that if we want to reduce our risk, we want to be consuming foods that are not processed, foods that are emphasizing plant-based foods, foods that are high in fiber, and foods that are going to be low in sugary additives and high in fat.
Okay. Oh boy, those sugary drinks, that's another one. You mentioned, so I think we have our list for, I guess, the ones that should be avoided. You already mentioned highly processed foods, so things like sausage and, you know, those processed meats are limiting. I'm trying to prove that I listened. So limiting your red meat as well as limiting your sugary drinks and alcohol and smoking. So anything else in there that we're missing that we should avoid eating or avoid doing in order to limit the risk? Or does that kind of cover it?
Okay, so So reducing risk would include things like you said. You missed out some though.
See, that's why I said.
The first thing you should have said was the processed meats, because we know that's a group one carcinogen. So we want to be avoiding processed meats. You know, just stop eating it. I know. Let the fire engine stay at the fire station so it could be ready to deal with the fire, right? So eliminating processed meats, avoiding or eliminating red meats, avoiding eliminating refined grains, flours. We're talking about processed white flour-based things, breads and pastas and crackers. You want to look for the word, not just whole grain, but 100% whole grain. Definitely avoiding too much additive sugars, too much fried foods. Oh, we didn't mention cheese. Now, you know, on our staple plate, we have to have that macaroni and cheese, and it is
you want
very
cheese on the deli sandwich, you want cheese on the hamburger, you want cheese on the fries.
You know? So we have those things under wrap, and like you said, alcohol. I think alcohol is a topic though that is not widely discussed enough, because alcohol is definitely having an impact, so much that the research shows that a high intake of alcohol can actually activate and stimulate the genes that promote tumor growth. And so we want to look into that, you know, do some research and find out, okay, what impact does alcohol have on breast cancer risk and progression?
Okay, that's a good one. I think sometimes people don't think about it because we have a culture of indulgence in general, right? Whether that's in food, whether that's in alcohol, risky substances, we generally have that sort of indulgent culture. But I think people, when it comes to especially the topics of women's health, they don't necessarily consider the discussions around things like alcohol. It's like, oh, you know, just you drink a glass of wine. You don't think about, because when people think about men and drinking, you think about heavy liquor and beers and all that stuff. But typically, we associate women's alcohol consumption in that, oh, it's just a dainty glass of wine, and not necessarily, you know, because we do have people who indulge, you know, greatly, whether they're men or women. So that's an interesting conversation we probably need to spend some more time on, maybe in a different episode, the effects and the impact of alcohol on our health. So that kind of covers most of the risk reduction. I think this is an interesting one. It's a delicate one to ask, but how does maintaining a healthy weight tie into breast cancer risk reduction?
Maintaining a healthy weight is essential for breast cancer risk reduction. Early in the conversation, I would have mentioned that the American Cancer Society has a document published called the Priorities for Primary Prevention for Breast Cancer. Mm-hmm. One of those things is maintaining a healthy weight. This conversation is timely, especially here in the Bahamas, because in 2019, the Ministry of Health would have conducted a health survey, and they found that at least 75% of persons living in this country are at minimum overweight and obese. Mm. That number is staggering. Why is this important? This is important because excess body fat produces more estrogen. Breast cancer is a hormonally driven cancer, and so if estrogen levels are elevated, it will enhance tumor growth. What else does excess fat do in the body? It increases insulin and insulin growth factor 1, which also are known to increase breast cancer tumor growth. And excess body fat also increases inflammation. You would have mentioned the word inflammation early in this conversation, and that also promotes tumor growth. So we see, just from those things I would have mentioned, maintaining a healthy weight, reducing excess adiposity is essential if you want to reduce your risk of breast cancer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've covered the risk reduction space. Let's move into nutrition during the actual treatment process. So let's say you're talking with someone who has been diagnosed and they're going through some form of treatment, whether it be chemotherapy, whether it be radiation, or whether it be surgery. What are some of the biggest nutritional challenges that they may face as they go through the treatment journey for breast cancer?
Right. So This part of the conversation is very important, because sometimes we may know persons who are experiencing side effects of cancer treatments, but not connecting them directly to nutrition. Mm-hmm. So some of these side effects that are nutritionally related includes like constipation, diarrhea, loss of taste, fatigue, nausea, vomiting, loss of appetite. All of these factors can lead to a decreased intake of food in general. What that's going to mean is then there's going to be a reduced intake of nutrients, a reduced intake of nutrients that perhaps that can help with the cancer fight. This can contribute also to what we call disease-related malnutrition. If a patient becomes malnourished, that means that their immune system is dampened, so they're going to be more at risk of developing infections. They're going to be hospitalized longer. They're going to have more complications. It's going to lower the lifespan. And so these side effects directly impact nutritional status, and they need to be addressed as well.
Like you said, I think it's a conversation that is very critical, because that is a difficult part of the journey for a lot of people because of, like you said, things like loss of appetite, and then that leads into issues like either constipation or diarrhea, depending on how your GI is set up. And there's a lot that comes into play in that space. You know, are there differences in your recommendations for women who are in, are there specific foods or nutrients that can help with these common side effects? Because like I said, how do you eat when you have loss of appetite? You know, and then how do you eat if you're having either diarrhea or constipation? How does that look as you're navigating that space?
Right, so these are great questions. So if a patient has nausea and low appetite, it would not help them if you put a big plate of food in front of them. So perhaps you may need to give smaller, more nutrient-dense foods more frequently, maybe some crackers, with a little bit of a topping that they would like to consume or not be have a reaction towards. Maybe they can suck on lemon or lime, maybe add lemon or lime juice to the water, drink some ginger tea, drink peppermint tea, get some ginger chewy type of candies that can help with the nausea and things like that, and avoiding strong odors. There's some foods that have a strong odor, and if a person said, well, you know what, I don't really like how that thing smells, I'm not going to call a name, then you want to avoid that. So that means that we need to be mindful about what we're eating as well around persons who may be going through these symptoms. What about diarrhea? There's a certain way of eating. It's called the BRAT diet, where persons can emphasize certain things, maybe eating more bland foods, trying some bananas, some rice, applesauce, some toast, some crackers. These things are known to help with managing the symptoms of diarrhea. And of course, with all the diarrhea, we want to be adding more fluids, maybe getting some coconut water, Pedialyte, some sports drinks, so we can replenish our electrolytes. When it comes to constipation, you want to identify things that can ease that. So in addition to getting adequate fluids, we want to make sure we get sufficient fiber. Now, one of the foods that are highest in fiber naturally besides a supplement are going to be beans, peas, and legumes. So maybe try some hummus dip. Maybe that can go on the toast or the crackers. Maybe add some beans to a soup or to a salad or to a stir fry. Get some more whole grains. If necessary, get a little fiber supplement. But these things can help with constipation. And what about loss of taste? Now, you know, taste buds are so important. When we eat food, we want to taste the food. We're not eating just to get nutrients. We want to enjoy it. But unfortunately, sometimes the side effects of cancer treatment can impact that. So maybe we can add some other flavors, try different spices, some marinades, add some lemon, lime juice, things like that. It can help with exciting those taste buds.
You mentioned the role of, to some degree, like staying hydrated, right? And getting like electrolytes and stuff in. How, because I think that's sometimes who people don't know what's safe and what's not safe. So like, I know some people just don't like water. They don't like the taste of it. It doesn't do anything for them. But, and sometimes it's just because maybe they need the electrolytes. So like coconut water, and like you mentioned, sports drinks, you know, but how important is that during the recovery? And I guess the tolerance to treatment part of the process.
It's very important because you want to prevent dehydration. Mm-hmm. If a patient becomes dehydrated, it will worsen those side effects. Mm-hmm. So the nausea and the low appetite, the constipation, the loss of taste, dehydration will lower or worsen the side effects of cancer treatments. If a patient is dehydrated, it would also compromise or lower the immune system. So that means that the patient will be more at risk of developing other infections. It also puts a stress on the kidneys if we are dehydrated. So while we want to focus on getting more fluids in and electrolytes, we also want to bear in mind that there's some things that are dehydrating. So for example, drinking alcohol, drinking things with caffeine, eating foods that are very high in salt can worsen dehydration. So here's some tips to help with your hydration status. Maybe set some reminders. Maybe you need to remember that you need to get some fluids in. Play around with temperatures. Perhaps sometimes you want it cooler, hotter, warmer. Add flavor to your water. Maybe some mint, some lemon, cucumbers. Enjoy some herbal teas. Get coconut water and broth. These are all tips that can help with hydration.
Okay. No, not the broth. I didn't think about that one. But I guess it's just another option, because like you said, it just depends on what you might be feeling for, so to speak, and trying to be able to kind of get at, because sometimes you might want savory, right? In the same way where you might want an herbal tea. So that's important to hear and understand. I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Ladies, at Oak Tree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI at Top of the Hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram Movement continues. Call us today at 24232 21145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring. Compassionate. Complete.
Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, Top of the Hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring, compassionate, complete.
Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oak Tree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 242-8164-OPP, 4667, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Primary Plus, where your health comes first.
Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
You know, I guess let's move into the conversation around remission and long-term health. So, you know, a patient has gone through their treatment and they've been told that their cancer is in remission. You know, what are some dietary principles that should guide them to reduce their risk of recurrence?
So remission is an important topic, and like you said, we were trying to reduce the risk of recurrence. So the research is very clear. A healthy dietary pattern can reduce the risk of developing breast cancer, and that should be maintained during remission. So in other words, if there's a way of eating that helps to lower your risk, so you would lower your risk of developing breast cancer, should you develop breast cancer and then go into remission, you want to maintain those same healthy dietary patterns, because the research shows that if you revert to the unhealthy dietary patterns, eating high intake of processed meats, red meats, processed foods, fatty foods, sugary foods, it will increase your likelihood of the cancer recurring again. So an overall guide is, we want to emphasize these unprocessed plant-based foods, colorful foods, a lot of fruits and vegetables, you know, maybe adding some ground flax seed and chia seeds, so that ensuring that we have lean protein, quality protein at meals. Protein includes beans, peas, nuts and seeds, egg whites, fish and poultry. You want to ensure that our foods are not excessively high in saturated fat and cholesterol, but lower in fat, and have an overall diet that is emphasizing antioxidants, so perhaps in herbs and spices, turmeric, colorful foods, and of course, limiting things like excess alcohol as well. So in short, the dietary patterns that can help to reduce the risk of breast cancer should be implemented throughout the process of breast cancer as well as in remission, because we want to prevent recurrence.
Right. You know, you mentioned antioxidants, and I think that's a word that we hear people say a lot of, but what role does like antioxidants play in this process? Because you obviously, I think you mentioned it early on in the risk reduction space, and you also mentioned it again here, but what specific role does that play in the process of health?
So antioxidants is an umbrella term that refers to these special plant phytonutrients, so nutrients that are in plants that are known to help to reduce inflammation, reduce oxidative stress. And as it relates to breast cancer, the research shows that it can have an impact on suppressing the genes that are promoting tumor growth. So an easy way to identify foods that are going to be rich in antioxidants is looking at the colors. And so if you have foods that are red and orange and yellow and green, purple and blue, brown, these foods have different antioxidants. So just quickly, you know, red is lycopene and orange can mean beta carotene. The yellows could be a vitamin C or flavonoids. Greens could be folate or some indoles. The blues could be anthocyanins. Red, purples could be resveratrol. And all of these particular antioxidants have specific functions that collectively help to reduce breast cancer risk.
So there's a close correlation between antioxidants and anti-inflammatory is what I'm gathering.
Yeah. So as I would have stated, the antioxidants help to reduce inflammation, oxidative stress, and also helps to turn off or lessen the expression of those genes that are promoting breast cancer tumor growth.
Yeah. It's you know, you hear people talk about the genes that produce, and I think it's so interesting to know that how we eat, what we consume, plays such an important role in what happens within our body. And sometimes we take it for granted. You know, but that's why kind of talking through this with you is helpful. And I hope it's helpful for our audience as they listen through. You know, I feel like sometimes dietitians can end up in this bubble of, you know, I just want to lose some weight, or, you know, I'm just trying to get to this ideal weight, whether it's I'm an athlete, I'm trying to, you know, bulk up for a competition, or I'm someone who I just have a couple of pounds I want to lose. But I think there's so much more value to what you offer in this space. So how important is it for someone who is in remission to have follow-ups with a dietitian as a part of their long-term care plan?
Including a registered dietitian or a certified nutrition specialist is essential if a person is wanting to promote quality of life and also reduce risk factors as it relates to breast cancer. Why? Because we know from the research that unhealthy dietary patterns are contributing to not just breast cancer, but the major causes of morbidity and mortality around the world. So if we take a little break right there, right? I'm reflecting on a medical article, a medical journal published in the Lancet Journal. And it said that after studying about 150 countries, they found that the leading cause of morbidity and mortality around the world was an unhealthy dietary pattern. So with that specific observation through the science, it is no dispute that persons who have breast cancer or not should be including a registered dietitian or other qualified nutrition professional as a part of their care, because it's going to help to reduce risk factors. As we would have stated earlier, we also have issues with side effects. We have issues with malnutrition. We have issues with identifying foods that can actually help us to improve our nutritional status. And so we don't have to walk this journey alone. We definitely want to include a registered dietitian or certified nutrition specialist as a part of a comprehensive multidisciplinary healthcare team if you want to have the best chance of improving your health.
Awesome. You know, obviously when you speak to lifestyle, you speak very clearly from the space of being a nutritionist, but how do other lifestyle factors like exercise, sleep, stress management, intersect and play with nutrition when it comes to like maintaining wellness after someone's gone through a fight with breast cancer?
That's a good question. So as a registered dietitian nutritionist and being board certified as a nutrition specialist, when we teach and we consult patients, we don't just focus on the food. We do have to incorporate other lifestyle factors because we recognize that together, the lifestyle factors are impacting health in general. So you mentioned a few things. You mentioned sleep, you mentioned exercise, you mentioned stress. This conversation about sleep, I think, is something that we don't talk about enough. Maybe you may hear about something called sleep apnea, but we don't necessarily talk about, okay, how does the quality of sleep impact our health? So as it relates to breast cancer, there's new research that is showing that there's really a major influence of sleep on breast cancer risk. For example, they have found that these persons who are called morning chronotypes have a lower risk of breast cancer. You'd be like, where is she coming with all these words from? A morning chronotype. Yeah, go Google that, right? Chronotype, C-H-R-O-N-O-T-Y-P-E. So a morning chronotype is a person who is most active, alert, and productive in the early hours of the day. And they have earlier bedtimes. Now you know, you don't want to go to sleep. We have all kind of things to do. This person who has an earlier bedtime, more active in the daytime, it has been shown that it helps to regulate the internal body clock. We call it the circadian rhythm. What happens? This then will help to improve our hormonal imbalance. And so that means that our estrogen levels, our insulin levels are going to be more in a balanced state. And these things are going to reduce the risk of breast cancer growth or tumor growth. And so in short, the research shows that getting better sleep, more quality sleep, more hours of sleep in the nighttime is being shown to reduce breast cancer risk. So we want to turn off those phones, turn off the TV, and get some rest. Exercise. Exercise is always promoted as one of the primary prevention strategies for breast cancer. Like I said, the American Cancer Society emphasizes physical activity. Why is this important? It's going to help not just with healthy weight, not just with blood sugar balance, not just for hormonal balance, but it also helps with reducing stress. It can also help with managing the symptom of fatigue. And excess stress is known to worsen breast cancer, is known to worsen basically all health situations. And so exercise is something that can be done. You could start simple, maybe stretch, maybe do some light walking, depending on where you are. But sleep, getting good sleep, getting good exercise, reducing stress levels are all important in the conversation about lifestyle medicine and breast cancer reduction, in addition to eating a healthier plant-based fiber-rich whole food diet.
Yeah, I think it's so simple too sometimes that we don't consider it because it's so simple. But if you think about it, if you eat late, more than likely that means you're going to bed later, right? And so you're not getting as much sleep. If you wake up late in the morning, then you're not necessarily going to be able to put together a healthy meal. You might just end up having to grab something, quote unquote, on the way to work. And that's how you end up with people having coffee and a donut as breakfast, you know, because they went on the Starbucks line rather than because they didn't have the time. So sometimes it's even just the simple, like logical things, like if you don't get enough sleep, you're not likely going to be able to go into the kitchen and do anything to say you're making a better meal. Because I think for the most part, you'll be able to do something healthier in your own kitchen than you would be able to grab on the way into work in the morning. So sometimes it's like simple, logical things like that we don't consider, but may make a world of difference as you walk through the journey. So, you know, let's look at some practical guidance for our listeners. For women who might be listening today, what are three practical everyday changes that they can make starting today to their diet that would improve or support their breast health?
One of the things that I would mention, besides just talking over and over again about processed meats, right, and red meat, is go on a sugar detox. Now, I don't know what that means for you, sugar detox, but let's talk a little bit about sugar, right? You know, it tastes good, and we like it. I often teach patients about sugars, not just okay, white sugar, brown sugar, but letting them know that there are other particular things that are acting in the body like sugar. Why is this important? It is because consuming excess processed sugary foods is actually feeding breast cancer tumor growth, right? So we're talking about adding fuel to the fire. Now, you know, if a fire is going on, you don't want to add additional fuel to the fire. And so we want to find ways to lower our intake of high sugary food. And we can start with the beverages, the sugar sweetened beverages, and opt more for eating foods that are naturally sweet with fiber. We're talking about fruit, having more water, drinking coconut water instead. So going on a sugar detox is essential. That's a good practical tip. Another tip you want to do is aim for eating 8 to 10 colorful fruit and vegetable servings in a day. I would have mentioned eating the rainbow in terms of getting all those colorful foods, because you're going to get antioxidants like the beta carotene, the lycopene, anthocyanins, etc. And so some practical things is that if you go by colors, so green vegetables, like the cruciferous vegetables, we're talking about things like broccoli and Brussels sprouts and kale, they have nutrients in them that are known to be cancer fighting. So we want to make sure we have those green foods on our plate or in the bowl. Red. So the red fruits and vegetables like berries, watermelon, tomatoes, they're also essential in terms of helping with the breast cancer nutritional support. Orange. So orange fruits and vegetables, whether it be carrots, pumpkin, and cantaloupe. Make the food colorful. Get your purples and the yellows inside there, and eat more fiber. Fiber is very important. Like I said, fiber helps to absorb excess carcinogens. Then we would defecate them out. Besides beans, we have things like ground flax seeds. We have chia seeds. You can make a chia seed pudding. You can add ground flax seeds to your cereal, into a smoothie, and other things. I won't be on the three, but you know, we go with time. Getting some of those special nutrients, like perhaps maybe some green tea and turmeric. These particular food items have been shown to have nutrients in them that help to dampen or lessen the expression of the genes that cause breast cancer tumor growth. So we're talking about getting more fruits and vegetables, eating more fiber, consuming more power nutrients like turmeric and green tea, in addition to lowering your intake of problematic foods, whether they be sugary foods, processed meats, and too much fatty foods.
So I know, I can speak from experience, because I was somebody who, Brussels sprouts, I'm like, no, not touching stuff like that. Like, it's just, because in my mind, like, that don't taste good. It don't taste like nothing. But I'll be honest with you, I would encourage people to give these different things a try, because there's always 100 different ways that you can cook something. And so don't just dismiss certain things out of hand because it sounds like something that you wouldn't be interested in. Be willing to give it a shot. Because like I said, you rewind 5 years for me and I wouldn't touch a Brussels sprout, I wouldn't touch kale, things like that. But, you know, going through, just different things, different journeys as a family, you know, we've taken on adding things like that into our diet. And it was difficult at first, but then you just find ways to prepare it that you like it, right? Where you're getting the nutrients and you're getting the flavor without necessarily, like, you know, just saying, dismissing it out of hand. So I would encourage people to just get creative with it. Be willing to do a little YouTube university and find recipes that you might like, or find a cookbook that you might like that's helpful in how to prepare some of these things that you might just think of me like, I don't want to eat that. That sounds healthy and not fun to eat. Because that's how we, a lot of times, we correlate healthy food and not being fun. But I think there's a lot of interesting and fun ways that you can take these healthy components of a diet and make it fun and make it interesting to consume. I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors and we'll be right back.
Ladies, at Oak Tree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI at Top of the Hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, The Million Mammogram Movement continues. Call us today at 242-321-145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring. Compassionate. Complete.
Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring, compassionate, complete.
Discover the ultimate in personalized health care with the Oak Tree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 242-8164-OPP, 4667, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Primary Plus, where your health comes first.
Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
For a lot of people, if you're a woman who's walking through a breast cancer journey and you are a wife or a mom or a daughter or a sister, you're not necessarily walking that journey entirely alone. So how can family support a loved one's nutrition journey, you know, during and after breast cancer treatment? Because that's an important part of this, as well as where community fits into the puzzle.
You're so absolutely correct. So family support is important in this nutrition journey for persons who may be diagnosed with breast cancer or be in remission. So some of the advice that I would give is to be open-minded and compassionate. Persons who have been given a breast cancer diagnosis can be oftentimes having a hard time. And so if we are compassionate and supportive, this will help them. When I have patients who may be diagnosed with breast cancer, sometimes it is observed that, you know, family members may react in a certain way to certain foods. So if I say, okay, perhaps eat food A versus food B, there may be this reaction from a family member in the room. I would encourage you to control that, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you have these nonverbal or verbal reactions to new ways of thinking about food, is going to be discouraging to your loved one. And you want them to be encouraged. You don't want to contribute to a poor mental health. So being open-minded, being compassionate, being supportive verbally and through your actions are very important. Also, as it relates to supporting them on this nutrition journey, is doing things that are going to help to enhance the social connection as it relates to food. We know that eating food can, we know that eating food is oftentimes connected to social activities.
Yeah, it's, and so it's can communal.
You, so can you imagine now, you talk about kale, right? Mm-hmm. Your loved one didn't even know the kale exists. They thought that was a garnish, right? they thought that was just something you just put around the edge just to make it look a bit more interesting, right. Not realizing you're supposed to eat some of that too. And so we have to now create spaces and opportunities where we can include healthy foods in a way where we're making positive memories. So an example could be, even outside of the dinner table, is maybe going outside to a garden. Going inside to a garden where there's fruits and vegetables growing, so we have that connection, we get some fresh air, some sunlight, it's relaxing. And they say, oh, you know what? Oh, we're gonna try this particular fruit or vegetable in this meal. I found this really nice recipe. You know, perhaps look at it, you know, oh, look at it, this is how it grows. You know, these kind of things are important, as well as enjoying some of those foods with them. So having a meal with them, you know, don't sit down and give them a plate of broccoli and orange sweet potato and some lean protein, and you sitting down eating a box of Kentucky. I mean, come on, right? I have no offense to whoever would be sponsoring anything, but it is not the same, right? We want to create these moments for social connection, making positive memories surrounding food, That's important. And the final tip, I would say, be practical. So practical tips will be helping with shopping and food preparation. Our loved ones may be tired, they may be in pain, and we can do all of these things to support them, to help to improve their quality of life. So what? Be open-minded and compassionate, enhance the social connection around food, and do things that helps them to actually acquire the foods that they need in a practical sense.
Okay. That's very helpful because like eating is such a communal activity, right? Like so much of how we celebrate and how we have occasions is around food. You're celebrating a birthday and it's like you're going to a restaurant or you're getting catering. For Christmas, it's like it's the big spread on the table. So much of how we commune and interact with people is around food. So it's important to kind of help to make that process easier. Like you said, you can't be sitting out eating the big box of Kentucky while you're saying, you know, just eat these little scraps of vegetables on the plate. It's just...
And kale garnish.
Right, because it's gonna be very... It's sometimes it's difficult. If you've not eaten in that way before, transitioning, even if you're doing just adding things to your existing diet and not necessarily taking everything away, that's still a difficult process to transition into. And so, you know, people who are within that person's support system, it's helpful to engage meaningfully in that way and not just leave them all to their lonesome. I think that's important for people to recognize and understand. We always like to take the opportunity to debunk myths and misconceptions when we have conversations like this. So are there any myths or misconceptions about food and breast cancer that you often find yourself needing to correct as a dietitian and nutritionist?
Okay, so when I thought about this, I'm thinking in my mind, okay, what is the biggest myth or misconception? I want to say that a mindset thinking that there's nothing that we can do. If you are a person who has a strong family of breast cancer in your family, you may feel as if, well, I'm just waiting until it's my turn. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, The doctor said that I have this. So then that just means it's time to write my will. Let me go and look for the pictures, right? But we need to be more assertive, and we need to be more positive in how we think about this whole situation about breast cancer. While we know that breast cancer can run in the family, while we know that there are genes that increase the risk of breast cancer, there's also a concept called epigenetics. And epigenetics is a science that helps us to understand that genes can be activated and genes can be deactivated. And so what that means then is that there are genes that can be suppressed or dampened as it relates to tumor growth. And the research is showing us that there are particular nutrients like polyphenols and isoflavonoids and indoles, isoflavones and indoles that actually can help with reducing or deactivating these genes that may be promoting breast cancer. So we're talking about maybe getting more green tea and turmeric and grapes, eating or consuming minimally processed soybeans in the form of edamame organic, maybe some simple tofu recipes. These particular foods and the nutrients that are in them have been shown in the research to help with influencing the genes that are promoting tumor growth. Recently, just last week, a patient asked me about soy and tofu, and they said, well, they have heard that sometimes people say it can help reduce breast cancer, it can increase breast cancer. They told me, don't eat this, don't eat the next thing. And I said to them, okay, I don't think that in the Bahamas, the reason why we have so many people with breast cancer is because they eat it. Scrambled tofu and tofu salad, right? It's not really that. But as it relates to tofu, that is a problematic topic for some people, and there are misconceptions around that too. I would say if you choosing to eat that particular type of food, you want to make sure it is unprocessed, it's organic, it's not genetically modified, and we are trying to consume it in its closest form that it came from, like, for example, edamame. Because the research does show that isoflavones in these type of soybean products have been shown to help with reducing the expression of the growth of the breast cancer promoting growth genes. And so I would say that, you know, thinking about how genes, how food impacts genes is another myth buster that we should consider.
Okay. You know, it's interesting. My wife and I was actually just having this conversation about soy and tofu and how it relates into breast cancer risk. And from what we found in trying to look up the research, so it seems like what it was there was a thought at a point that soy products and tofu products might have the potential chance of increasing breast cancer risk. And people were so uncertain that they weren't willing to test it on human subjects. So they were testing it in animals, they were testing it in other species, but they weren't testing it in humans. And for a long time they didn't. So that's why it kind of just sat there and people took it as like, well, maybe this is something I should stay away from. And then finally, they got enough confidence to say that they think that it wasn't a risk, that they actually started to test it in humans, and they were able to say that there's not a risk associated between consuming soy and tofu. Now, I get your point. As unprocessed as possible, because once you get into the processing situation, then everything becomes a risk, right? Because there's so much that happens if it's ultra processed. But if you're finding it in as close to its natural form, its whole food form, like you say, then that's the safest way that you consume it. You can consume it. So it is interesting to kind of hear that part of the conversation, because that is something where for a long time, people just weren't willing to do the research on humans because they were so concerned that it might actually increase the risk. And it wasn't until they finally decided to say, hey, we might actually tackle this and see what it is for real, that concept or that thought process kind of changed a little bit. So that's good to hear. Two final questions for you. What words of encouragement would you share with women who feel overwhelmed about making dietary changes during their breast cancer journey?
I would say you don't have to walk this journey alone. Seek out a qualified registered dietitian who has the experience, the knowledge, and the expertise to aid you in your journey. There's a lot of information on the internet. It can take you in all kinds of different directions. Many people have their opinions on what people should be eating, but it'll be more beneficial to you if you get the assistance and the advice from a nutrition specialist, like a registered dietitian nutritionist or somebody board certified as a nutrition specialist.
Okay, awesome. So, you know, how can someone connect with you if they're looking for personalized guidance because they are currently walking through a breast cancer journey, whether that's treatment or they have recently gone into remission? How do they get in contact with you?
Persons can get in contact with me at Oak Tree Medical Center South on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursdays. The telephone number is 356-7091 or 825-4674 or Oak Tree Medical Center West and JFK Plaza on Tuesdays and Fridays. Telephone number is 605-5022 or 806-4443.
Thank you so much. And as always, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. I think there's so much good information that comes with how nutrition plays a role in all these different areas of our health and different challenges that people can face. So we are grateful, as always, to have you take time out of your busy schedule to join us on Vital Voices and give our audience some much needed helpful information.
Thank you, Mr. Burrows. I look forward to the next visit.
Awesome. All right, so we hope today's conversation has reminded you that healing is more than medical. It's also nutritional, emotional, and all-encompassing. As Shanishka shared, small, consistent choices around what we eat can transform how we live, recover, and thrive. If you or someone you love is navigating breast cancer, reach out for support from a qualified dietitian and lean on a community that encourages whole person wellness. Until next time, stay informed, stay connected, stay well, and stay tuned for the next Vital Voice.
We'd like to thank today's sponsors, Oak Tree Medical Center and Wellspring Lifestyle Group.
Did you miss a part of today's show? You can catch this episode and all Vital Voices episodes online at youtube.com/@VitalVoices242. See you next week as we sit down with another Vital Voice.
Vital Voices.